Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Justin Champion, 21 years of career experience, a retired deputy chief from the Southern California area who is now the training coordinator for New Mexico State, training captain with Santa Fe County Fire, and owner and creator of From the Ashes, LLC. Upon completion of serving in the armed forces, Justin knew the fire service was where he wanted to be. A friend's introduction was able to get him through the door where Justin's journey set sail. From fire conferences, outside trainings, switching organizations, the ups and downs of staying engaged, Justin went through it all. And from that was where Justin was able to gain maturity through his experiences and wants to share so others can learn and grow. With that, I present Justin Champion.
My name is Justin Champion. Started out my career in the Army, and that's kind of where I got into the fire service. I was volunteering out different places. I went in the Army, knew I wanted to be a firefighter when I got out, got together with a buddy that was already a fireman, did some rides with him and stuff. And that's kind of where I fell in love with it. Spent my career in three different spots, Arizona, North Dakota, and finished up in California. Then I moved out here kind of in the retirement phase, not really knowing what I wanted to do, and just decided to get back into it out here. So now I'm with the State Fire Academy, and I'm also training captain over at Santa Fe County Fire Department. And that's kind of just where I am now. Married, and I've got five kids. And yeah, that's just kind of where I'm at. I keep going until I can't go anymore because I love the fire service. So yeah, that's just me in a little quick nutshell, a little bit more to it, but long journey in between there, of, you know, some trauma and stuff like that. But yeah, still love the fire service and keep going.
Okay. Five kids, man, my heart goes out to you. You're a better man than I am, because we're not doing that. But okay, I'm going to kind of go back a little bit. You stated you served for our country. So first and foremost, thank you for your service. Really appreciate that. And upon you getting out, you said that you wanted to get into the fire service. So what were your avenues? What did you do to get that first gig?
Oh, sure. The first thing I did was, like I said, I had a friend that was already a fireman. I started kind of hanging out with him. I went down to the station, kind of hung around, talked to the guys, learned the culture. I mean, I was just out there in the mornings from the time I could get out there until the evening, like washing trucks, training with them, like whatever they would let me do. I mean, even if it was mopping the floor, you know what I mean? I was all about it. And all those guys kind of took me under their wing and showed me what I needed to do. So I went, you know, I went to their fire academy. I went and got my EMT, and then, just kind of went from there. Just kept hanging out with them. I started, you know, volunteering, and like, luckily for me, because I did put that time in, I got a full time gig not long after after I went to the academy. I didn't get off, you know, I didn't have a long time. Like some of the other guys I knew from my academy had quite a while, like volunteering and stuff. But luckily, I got on full time, and then just kind of went from there.
Okay, and so upon completion of your academy and you getting hired, your first assignment, did you automatically seek out those individuals you wanted to emulate and be like, or is that something that you figured out along your journey?
It's kind of like, I kind of figured out along my journey, you know, cause hanging out with guys and kind of is different than being part of them. You know what I mean? So, and I didn't even get on with the fire department that I was hanging out with. I got on with a different fire department. So it was kind of learning as I went, and realizing who I wanted to emulate and who I didn't. You know, because you have good leaders, you have good guys, and you have bad. And I kind of learned from all of them and kind of formed who I wanted to be as a fireman from that. And so it wasn't a quick, like, hey, I know I want to do this, right? It was taking what I learned in the military and that attitude of, you know, I want to be the best at what I do, and taking into the fire service. And I kind of already had that attitude, you know? So I seeked out the people that I knew were hard chargers, right? And I just kind of tried to emulate them. I picked their brain. You know, I did everything I could to be really good at what I did. And not until later on in my career, probably 3 or 4 years into it, I realized, hey, I got to get outside and go to different conferences outside of my state. I got to get out there and really put myself out there and learn from guys across the country, because it's not just us. You know what I mean? So I started doing that. And that's really where I started forming how I wanted to do things. because I went to conferences all over the country, and I kept doing that. And I see these guys from Georgia and Texas and you name it, right? And I'm like, dang, these guys are it. These guys are firemen, right? And that's kind of where I got my love for it and how I wanted to be. So that's where I got my love for learning and wanting to just, be a sponge and learn everything I can about the fire service and how to be the best I can for the people out there in the community. So that's kind of where how I did it. And of course, along the way, you get some guys you don't necessarily, get along with, or you find out they aren't the greatest leaders and stuff like that. And I didn't want to be like that, right? So I got guys that I emulate even now, like the Ian Schultes and stuff like that have really been mentors to me, younger than me, but been in the fire service longer than me, right? So I never had that chip on my shoulder about like, oh, I know this, right? I didn't care who it was. I'm gonna learn, right? And luckily, I had some good mentors come along the way and really point me in the right direction. So yeah, that's kind of how my journey's been, and I'm continuing that journey. That's kind of why I got back into it and took the job at the Fire Academy at the state, so I could spread that word, right? Because a lot of guys here in New Mexico, they don't really get outside and go to other things. Like they're kind of still stuck in. We gotta stay here, and we gotta learn from. Well, you can't learn everything you can if you don't broaden your horizon and get out there, right? So I got to the point here where I went to the Fire Academy, and that's the reason why I did, was to teach guys here that there's a lot out there, and to get around the state, kind of spread the word, because I get to go out and train with all the different fire departments around the state. So I get to spread that word that I've learned, really that for them attitude, So yeah, that's kind of how my journey's been, and how I approached education and getting the word out there. And so it's been kind of rewarding to do that.
Okay. I do have a question, and anytime I have a guest that has served in both areas, I always like to ask. So you constantly hear, or at least for me, I do, fire department is paramilitary. With you having experience in both, would you say that is an accurate statement? Because for me, it's false.
I would say that people like to throw that around, and I think it's definitely false. I think they want to be paramilitary with like the rank structure and all that, but if I'm being honest with you, I don't see it. I think it's false because they don't approach it like the military. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You're right. You want to be military-ish. You want to be paramilitary. That's kind of why I got into it. I was like, okay, all these guys are telling me it's paramilitary, and you're gonna do great. And you get into it and you're like, this really isn't paramilitary because I can't say certain things, I can't do certain things. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, you're pushing them too hard in PT. You're too mean. Like, and coming from the military and coming from a culture of like, I mean, feelings are one thing, but like we're in a very inherently dangerous job like the military. And if you're gonna be paramilitary, be paramilitary. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a very false. I mean, there might be some departments out there that are very paramilitary, right? But
Right.
it's my experience, not so much.
Exactly. Okay.
Yeah.
And I always love to ask the guests that because, I have so many examples for, come to mind, like, all right, if somebody doesn't like something that either has happened to them or whatever the case may be, instead of going up the chain like you're supposed to, they can go around without any sort of consequence. And I'm sure with the military, it's a strict chain of command rule, and there is no deviation.
Oh yeah, no, and I've even seen that. I've seen that in the departments I worked at, where guys can just go around their lieutenant, go to their captain, or go around all of them, go to a chief, right? And in the military, if you did that, the guy's gonna look at you and be like, "Did you talk to your squad leader?" Oh no. All right, well, get out of my office. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And that's what we need. That's what we need in the fire service, because now it looks like your lieutenant might be banged up, but if you're not giving them a chance to be banged up, what are you doing? You know what I mean? And we have to as leaders, we have to get to that point where we ask those questions. Hey, did you talk to your LT? No, I didn't talk to him. Well, then why are you standing in here? You know what I mean? And that's the only way to get better. Like you gotta, if you're gonna have chain of command, have chain of command.
Right.
Like
Yes.
give the guy a chance to fix your problem before you. Chief don't need to know everything. You know what I mean?
That's right. Okay. All right. Love it. Love it. With that being said, so The department that you started with, is that the same department where you decided to climb the ranks all the way up to fire chief?
No, I made it to we called it senior firefighter because we didn't have engineers. I made it to senior firefighter, and then I ended up, that's when I left and I went to North Dakota, simply because there was no more, I couldn't climb the ranks anymore unless at my age, because I came in late after the Army. If I would have waited there, I mean, I got guys that are, I know guys that are still at the department I started with that are in the same positions, that there was just no way, you know what I mean? And this is 20 years later. So there was just no way. And then I had some friends up north that were like, "Hey man, come up here. You know, we're building, we're getting bigger. You know, there's chances for guys like you. We need guys like you," because they were going from a volunteer department to a full-time department with like three stations. So they're like, "Hey, we need experienced guys." They were recruiting, actively recruiting experienced guys, you know, giving them the money and all that stuff, right? So I was like, "Hey, you know, this is what I wanted to do, so let's do it." So I went up to North Dakota, worked my way up into the training division up there, you know, from I mean, I came in a rookie again, right? Went from rookie, made it to engineer, LT, captain, and then I lateraled over to the training division. And that's when, I mean, I guess you'd call me kind of a traveling man, but I got a call from a guy in California, and he's like, "Hey, we got a deputy fire chief's position open." And I, you know, at that point, I'd never even thought about being a chief. You know, I made captain, I'm in the training division, I'm where I envisioned myself in my career, right? I'm where I wanted to be. Then I went and I talked to my wife at the time. She's like, "You know, whatever makes you happy." And her and I were going through some things anyway. That's another story. But so I was like, "You know what, man? I'm gonna give it a shot." I had a mentor there. His name's Mike Fronimos. He's an assistant fire chief out in Michigan, I believe now. And he's like, "You at least got to give it a shot, champ. You know what I mean? This doesn't come along to everybody, right?" So I was like, "You know what? I'll give it a shot." So I did. Okay, because I planned on finishing out my career in North Dakota. I loved it there. I loved the department. I loved the guys. Met a lot of friends, and they supported training. Like, because you don't get a lot of fire departments that support, like, "You want to go somewhere, we're going to pay for it, right? No matter what it is, you want to go, we're going to help you go." And so I loved it, right? And then I went ahead and I took it, went down there, into California, and it ended up not being everything I thought it would be. And at the time, I was going through a divorce and all this kind of personal stuff, right? And it just didn't work out the way I thought it would be, so I stepped away. And that's when I was like, "I'm just gonna step away." You know, I'd lost the love for it. You know, not lost the love, but it was kind of on the back burner, right? I just didn't feel the same way I did coming to work. I didn't get excited to get up and go to work, so I stepped away. And then that's how I ended up in New Mexico, because the woman I was dating at the time after my divorce lived out here, and I came out here and started hanging out with firemen out here and stuff, and that's when I really got the fire again. And that's how I ended up where I am at. But yeah, I ended up in California. Wasn't a good situation for me, and decided, "Hey, I'm gonna hang it up."
If I can ask you, and I won't go and ask you like personal detail, but I want to know, you know, right now in the day and age of the fire service, there are individuals who go from one place to another to another.
Correct.
And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but my question is, you know how like you'll always see sometimes the grass is always greener or whatnot, maybe. What advice can you give to somebody who may be thinking like, you know, my current department, I don't like this about it, but I hear good things about this, but they don't really know. So what kind of advice can you give to someone who's in that predicament?
I would say that every department has its problems, right? But if you're happy where you're at, besides like little things, or because you're going to find little things anywhere. So my advice would be, if you're invested in a place, if you get up in the morning, you're still fired up to be a fireman, stay where you're at and help make that change to make things better that you think aren't so great, right? And that's one of my biggest regrets. Like you said, grass, I thought grass was always greener, right? And I was happy where I was at. I like that department. It's a good department. If I could go back in time, I would stay that in that training division as a captain and finish out my time there and really enjoy my time. I would say to anybody thinking about doing that, really sit back and write down your pros and cons. And if there's just little things that you know you can change, stay there and be that change. Because if I could go back and do that, I would. Because it's not often you find a department that you really, you know, you're invested in, you've got time in, and you know you and you're in a position. I was in a position to make change, to help make change. I was in a train division, right? But even if you're on an engine or a truck, you can make change. Don't be so quick to jump ship. If I could go back and do it all over again, I would stay in North Dakota.
I mean, and you know, it's one of those things some people who might be in that spot might need to hear, you know, an individual such as yourself state that, you know, write down the pros and cons. Because I mean, I'm going to be 100% transparent. I've been there, man. I've been there where it's like, you know, this whatever is driving me crazy about my department. And then you see the allure of we're hiring. I mean, it's all over social media. Every department's hiring right now. But it's like, do you make that jump? Should I just pack everything up, make that transition? So I love the tips and advice that you gave.
Yeah, because I like, you know, you always have regrets that you have, right? Nothing I can do about it now. I can't change the past, can't go back. But anybody out there that's on the fence, I would say look at the good things that your department offers. And if it outweighs the small things that are really, because it's always small things that really aggravate us, right? It's just small things. Like when I go back and I think about it, it was little things, little tiny things. Oh, you get passed up for promotion. Oh, you didn't, you don't get this, you didn't get this raise, or the training isn't exactly how you want it. Those are all things that can be fixed, right? You didn't get the promotion, study harder next time, right? It's all little stuff. No, nobody leaves their department over usually over big things, right? And if they do, rightfully so. But if it's just small things that you can fix, I would say fix it, man, because you know, there's not a day that goes by that I don't wish I was still part of that department. I even reached out to the chief and a couple other guys that I'm still friends with and say, man, I wish I could come back. You know what I mean? I made a mistake. I dropped the ball on that one because I was chasing that white helmet, right? No, but I don't care about my title or doggone color of my helmet. You know what I mean? I wish I would have stayed because I could have made a real impact there, and I was making an impact there. And guys until today say they wish I would have stayed, and I agree with them. So anybody that's on the fence out there, really sit down and think. Don't go off the cuff like I did. Like, really sit down and think about it. Write down your pros and cons. Say, hey, man, this is little stuff. I'm gonna fix it. You know what I mean?
And I'm assuming it was a little bit too late to go back after you left.
Yeah, it was a little, yep. They'd already filled my position and did all that. I mean, I could have went back, but I you know, I'd be a rookie again. You know what I mean? And at that point, I kind of weighed the pros and cons, say, hey, this is on me. I messed up. I gotta go with my decision now, you know, as a man. So
And I love that part too. It's one of those things individuals. Firefighters need to understand that no one's perfect, but they also need to understand when you fuck up, just own it. You know what I mean? Like, own it. There, stop make, don't make excuses. Don't blame it on the next person. Just own it. We're all gonna do it, but we all need to own it. And I think that's a killer of the fire service where if you can't see that, then you will never be able to either help that other person or make other people realize, like, hey, listen, like this person failed. They owned up to it. They're moving on.
yeah, and the more I went back and thought about it, man, it wasn't so much the department that were making little mistakes. A lot of it was me. You know what I mean? A lot of it was things that I could have fixed internally that would have made my time there better. You know what I mean? So I would another piece of advice, now that we're talking about it, another piece of advice is sit down and think about it. Is it stuff that you're doing? Like you said, I own it now. You know what I mean? If I would have done some things different at that department, I would have been much happier. If I would have just not been so frustrated with little tiny things and just, you know, did my thing, understand I can't control everything and only control the stuff that I can, I'd still be there right now, man. Like, it was me. You know what I mean? I was, part of me was the issue, not just the department. Part of me was the issue. So people got to look at that too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. You'd mentioned earlier, you know, you had lost that love. And I don't know a single fireman who can say, maybe I'm wrong, but the majority of the ones I speak to, they've all said they have never been into the job their entire career. There's always an ebb and flow, a peak or a valley where they hit a certain point where they're just not into it. So what did you do? Well, first off, how did you realize that that was occurring to you, and what did you do to correct that problem?
Yeah, for me, I always, when I looked forward to shift, right? Even when I was in the training division, 8 to 5, you know, doing my thing, I got up in the morning fired up. When I started realizing that I wasn't fired up. I was, calling in sick, maybe being a little bit late, which they overlooked because I did do a good job, right? And I realized one day, like, man, what am I doing? Like, it doesn't feel like it used to. You know what I mean? Like, and to overcome that, what I did personally, was I started getting back out there again, trying to reset, right? I was going to conferences again, even local conferences, just going out and doing fireman shit. You know what I mean? And that's what really, really got me back into that. You know what? I do love this. I'm glad I didn't just quit on it, And a lot of that came after I stepped away. Once I got here to New Mexico and linked up with some firemen out here and really started getting that drive again. I went to some conferences when I wasn't really a part of an organization, right? I just stepped away, FDIC, stuff like that, being around other firemen that were still fired up got me fired back up. You know what I mean? And that's when I started looking. Hey, I got to get back into this, right? But I wanted to get back into it where I can make an impact. And I had a buddy that was here in New Mexico, and he's like, "Why don't you look at the state, man? They got a bunch of positions open for instructor coordinators, and you get to go around and do what you love to do is train, right?" Because, I mean, I even train at home. You know what I mean? I got gear here. I train at home, whether it be PT, pulling my tire around the yard, doing whatever, right? And I was like, "You know what? Maybe I'll do that." And I went over there and I talked to him, and I went over there and gotten that gig, and that really fired me up, because now I'm doing, I'm doing burns every day, I'm doing rescue every day. Now I'm really doing fireman stuff every single day, and that really got me fired back up. I even get fired up talking about it. And then my buddy over at Santa Fe County was like, "Hey man, we got these PRN positions, and we need a training captain, right?" I was like, "Okay, so you're gonna pay me to come in there and just design your training and give trainings and stuff like that. I'm in, right?" So now I'm back to the point where I feel like I was when I was a rookie, man. I'm fired up about being a fireman, and you're right. Some of the best firemen I know have gone through those ups and downs. Like, man, I don't know if I can do this anymore. You know what I mean? That doesn't mean you give up. That doesn't mean you give up on what you love, because if you step completely away, and I can speak on that because I was away for a little bit, you don't know what you're gonna do. It's like, hey, what do I do with my hands? You know what I mean? Like, it's in us. It's ingrained in us. It's who we are. So like, as long as I can still do it, I'm gonna still do it. And I think that's how I got over, was just getting out there, getting myself back in the culture, getting out there and getting put some reps in, and just really getting back to not worried about if I'm gonna be a chief, not worried about if I'm gonna be just a rookie fireman, just being around the culture and guys that are really fired up about it. You know what I mean? So that's how I did it.
Okay. And if you can you elaborate what exactly you do as a training quarter for the state of New Mexico?
Sure. We do every month. We put on like a 4-week academy, for like the volunteer departments, the smaller departments. They come down, and it's a full-on academy, right? We do the fire one and two, even PowerPoints, and then we get out there. We do burns, and we do all like a full-on academy, right? We do that once every month. Okay. In between that, I go out to the departments here in New Mexico and help them coordinate training and what they need help in. Like, it can be as small as, "Hey, my guy needs some work on hose advancement." I'll go out to that department, spend a week with them, and do nothing but hose advancement. You know what I mean? So I get to go to the smallest department to the biggest department. Like, I just taught an officer two class, sorry, officer one class to the Las Cruces Fire Department here. They got 200 members. So I get to go from, I get to work and help and teach these guys from the smallest department that barely know how to put their gear on to guys that run fires every day. You know what I mean? So for me, that's awesome. I meet guys that now they're some of my best friends, so it's been a really good gig for me.
And I'm assuming if somebody reaches out to the state on a specific topic, and if you're not the guy, you guys have subject matter experts that kind of hit every single point field, in
We have,
relation to the fire service.
right, the way we break it down is, we have each of us, there's only six of us in the entire state. We break it down into districts, right? So we're pretty busy. But if they hit me up for, say, because I'm not a ropes guy, right? But we have a subject matter expert that is. Now I'll go help him. I'll go be an adjunct with him and help him teach the class. But he's the man, right? So if anybody calls the state and says, "Hey, I need a ropes one and two class," he's the guy. He's going to come teach it. For me, my subject matter is engine ops, in truck ops. So if we got like a small department that's never done VES before, I'm the guy that's going to go do it. You know what I mean? So we all work real well together. Everybody's got their real subject that they're real tight on, but we all come together and work. So it's like if I go teach a hose advancement class, I've got a couple other guys from the state that, I mean, all these guys are retired firemen, right? So they know how to advance hose, they know how to do truck ops, that sort of thing. But we always have leads for certain classes. Like right now, I'm a lead. We call it structural tactics class. It's just a week-long class of getting your ass kicked, right? Where reps and reps and reps of engine work. So I'm the lead on that, but I have other guys that come out and help.
Okay. All right. And with the way the fire service is always evolving, it's probably safe to say that you are also going out there, taking these outside classes, learning what you're bringing back, what you're learning from those experiences.
Oh, 100%. That's part of they want us to do that.
Okay.
Yeah, they encourage that. So like if I want to go to like unfortunately I was signed up for Oath Keepers Fire Conference this year. Unfortunately, that structural class that I teach falls on that, so I couldn't go. But they were going to send me. You know what I mean? Like so they want us to get out there, and it's not all about just certification classes. It's classes where we can bring back real world training and put it into those classes. You know what I'm saying? So they encourage all of us to go out there and do that, which I like too, because like I tell the guys in my class, I've never put a fire out with a piece of paper. You know what I mean? Like you can go get a 40-hour class that don't make you a subject matter expert. You got to get out there and learn from guys that do it every day. So that's kind of what they and they agree. Like, you know, our bosses, our the guys that are oversee all the instructors, they're all about that too. So it works out.
All right. In your personal opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
Aggressive to me, aggressive means I'm not going to sit back and watch, right? Aggressive doesn't have to be reckless, okay? Aggressive is I go out there and I train every day, just like we did in the military. I train every day to accomplish this mission for the people that we serve, and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. I'm not going to sit back and wait, right? For example, I got a person trapped inside that building. My training, it should fall down. My lowest level of training is up here, right? So I'm going to be aggressive. I'm going to go in that building and I'm going to search it. I'm not going to sit outside on the lawn like a doggone lawn gnome and let somebody die inside that building. I'm going to get off that truck. I might not be taking a hose with me, right? But I'm going to go in there and I'm going to get you. That's aggressive, right? I'm not being reckless. I train every single day. I train hard and I train realistically to make me be able to be an aggressive fireman to where I know if I got to go through that window, my training is going to kick in. It's not going to fail me because I do it every day. That's aggressiveness to me. And a lot of people look at aggressiveness like somebody jumping off a truck and just going in. Because in today's day and age with the safety culture, I don't necessarily agree with that, right? You know what safe is? Safe is training. Safe is making yourself as prepared as you can be to go into that building in the worst possible time that those people are going through. That's aggressiveness, right? Relying on your training, being an aggressive firefighter is training every. It starts in the house, is training every day and training hard and realistically, so you're prepared to go into those situations. That's aggressive. People look at the word aggressive and they get all scared, like, oh, he's a reckless cowboy. Well, I'll be that cowboy because I'm out there preparing myself to be that way. You know what I mean? So for me, aggressive is a calculated aggression, right? I'm training every day. I'm preparing my crew, preparing myself. When I'm off duty on my 4 days, I'm still doing some kind of training. I'm still working out. I'm still, you know, going to seminars, going to conferences, preparing myself for those situations. That's how you become a good aggressive fireman.
Fact. Facts. Okay. Personal question for me. I don't know much about the New Mexico area. So where you are at, I'm assuming you have small career jurisdiction departments, or is there a bigger department that I'm just not knowing of
Oh,
in New
no,
Mexico?
we have a little bit of a mixture of both, right? We have the smaller 3, 4, 5 station career departments, but we also have Albuquerque Fire Department, which is a huge metropolitan department, right?
Okay.
500 plus members. We have Las Cruces, we have Santa Fe. Those are our bigger, like 200 plus member departments, right? But then you have a lot of the smaller, you know, 4, 5, 6 station city departments. But then we have county departments on top of that that have anywhere from 6 stations in their county to, you know, double digits, right? And they they kind of cover those unincorporated, and we're like we have Bernalillo County Fire Department that falls within Albuquerque, and they automatic aid a lot, right? Bernalillo County has over 200 members too, so it all really depends on where you live in New Mexico. Like Santa Fe County, they have quite a bit of stations, and they run with Santa Fe City, so they do a lot of the unincorporated places on the outside. So New Mexico is a little different because you have like your smaller city departments, you have your big metropolitan departments, and then you have your county departments.
Okay. All right. And then you also have, I'm assuming, while throwing in there some volunteer
Oh
departments
yeah.
too.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of open space in New Mexico, right? So you have a lot of, along the way, you have these the smaller volunteer organizations, which
Okay.
I will say the volunteer departments that I've worked with, a lot of people give volleys a hard time, but these guys are on it. Like they want to train, they want to be firemen, right? I get more calls from volunteer departments than I do any other place. Like they want to learn. So we got a good thing in New Mexico that I think a lot of people don't realize. Like we have everything from metropolitan to small, like you said, like one station volunteer department, but they're very, very good at what they do.
Okay. All right. With that being said, how does a department, which I know you can't speak on, well, you can kind of speak on a department, but how does the state bring in realistic training for those departments or those members that want to get that rep in?
Well, I know for one, we have every year here in New Mexico, I'm getting ready to experience my first one. We have a it's called the Expo, Fire Expo.
Okay.
So it's kind of like our mini FDIC, right, for New Mexico. So we bring guys from the outside, we bring guys from across the state, and they all have to be vetted, and they put in their same as any other conference, right? You put in your what training you want to deliver and how you're going to deliver it. So I think that's big. And what you see a lot of here in New Mexico is guys, individual departments bringing guys from out of state in to teach, right? So a lot of it is on the individual departments that I've seen, but Expo is the big one where we bring guys in and learn that way.
Okay. All right. That's awesome. Earlier you mentioned that at what point in your career you held title of chief. You had that white helmet. So in your opinion and with your experiences, what does leadership look like to you? What kind of leader did you want to be?
For me, and it was the same way in the military. I'm really big on not asking my guys to do anything. I like to be connected, right? I'm going to be the first one through the door and the last one out the door, right? Leading from the front, servant leadership. My guys come before anything, right? And for me, that's what leadership has to be about. And that's kind of why I decided to step away because I was a deputy chief, and once you get into that role, I ended up being so far disconnected from the guys that it wasn't really enjoyable, right? Because I like to be out there on the ground, doing things, getting in the building with them, training with them. And sometimes it's just not possible. Some guys kind of lose sight of where they came from. So what I've always tried to emulate, because I had some really good leaders in the military and I've had some really good leaders in the fire service that were like that. I've had battalion chiefs that don't make entry with you know what I mean? And that's the kind of leader I want to be. I want to go in there with you. I want to show you that you can count on me, that I'm the guy, right? That you can come to me no matter what, personal, professional, whatever. I'm that guy. Bring it to me, right? And I think that starts with getting out there on the floor with them, running calls, doing training, get out of your office, take that white shirt off, put your blue t-shirt on and go be a fireman, right? That's how you lead. And you have to be willing to learn to lead. Right, you might learn something from a guy that's on the floor that you didn't know before. You have to have that open-mindedness to be that leader, right? To be a good leader, you have to be a good student. So if you're not, you need to adjust the way you're coming at things, and because your way is not always the way, right? You might have a guy that just came out of the academy. You went to the academy 20 years ago. They might be teaching some new stuff, right? If a profi comes up to you and says, "Hey, have you ever thought about this, chief?" No, let's try it. You know what I mean? If they got an idea, let's give it a shot. But you've got to get out there and lead from the front. There is no, "Hey, you go in that building, I'm going to stay out here," right? You got to show them, especially for me, coming in as a new chief or a new captain or whatever, you got to show give them you got to prove to them just like they have to prove to you. you got to prove to them that they can follow you, right? Because sometimes you might get into that leadership position, you got a guy that's been on the floor because he chose to stay in that position for 18 years, right? A lot of knowledge, a lot of background, right? And you got to prove to him that you deserve to lead him, right? Him or her, right? So you got to get out there and lead from the front. Leading from the front and being a servant to your guys is the only way. They don't work for you, they work with you, right? Right beside each other. And I got a lot of that from the military, and that's what I try to bring over to the fire service is I gotta prove to you every single day that I deserve to wear that helmet, right? Otherwise, why am I there? I'm just another guy. At that point, I'm a manager, I'm a boss, I'm a supervisor, I'm not a firefighter, I'm not a leader.
And that's where I think a good number of the issues stem from is individuals getting that rank, getting that title, and completely forgetting where they came from. And I understand, so I'm not trying to be oblivious on things. Like, there are certain departments that when you become a certain position, yes, you're going to be tied up with meetings. You're going to be doing paperwork, making sure your department's running smoothly as possible. But there is also some downtime where if you can go visit a station, drive to the training grounds and see what's going on, kind of to re-engage yourself. Because I think, like you mentioned, the disconnect happens. And when the disconnect happens for a long period of time, it's very hard to get that individual back.
Oh yeah, and like you said, I agree. Like I'm not saying like if you're like for an example, we're in New Mexico. If you're at Albuquerque Fire Department and you're a deputy chief of 500 guys in a major metropolitan area, maybe you can't get down there and get on an engine every day, right? But for guys like myself, I've been on departments where it's possible for a chief to get out there and ride a truck for a day, or like you said, visit. You have three stations. There's no reason why you can't jump out of your, take an hour out of your day and go visit your guys, right? There are differences, right? But I would say if you're a leader, if you're popping into that chief's position and you're in a three, four station department, get out there and show them why you deserve it. Because honestly, they already all know you, right? In a department like that, they know you. So be that same guy that you were when you were a lieutenant or a captain and get out there and show them, hey, just because I put this white helmet on doesn't mean I'm doing less work. You should be doing more work because you have that opportunity. You have that opportunity to really make a difference in a department that size. And even if you're in a, because I know guys that are chiefs and captains in some of these bigger departments, and they do that. They get out, they make it part of their schedule. Hey, from noon till 3 o'clock, I'm going to be out visiting stations. That goes a long way, right?
Absolutely.
It all depends on what kind of leader you want to be. Do you want to be respected, or do you want them to respect your rank? They're going to respect your rank, but are they going to respect you, right? And
Facts.
just as a chief, just doing those little small things. Well, deputy chief came down today and visited a station, ran a couple calls with us. That's a big difference between I've never even met him, right?
That's a damn fact, bro. I mean, a lot, like I tell people. For there are some individuals, I gotta respect the rank, but I don't have to respect the person.
Right.
And I'm gonna be 100% transparent. I do not care. Like, yep, you show up, you say hey to me, I'll say hi to you. That's as far as it's gonna go.
Right. But then if you have that chief, there's like I had a chief of department that would come down when we're shorthanded, we're just getting our butts kicked. He'd jump on a rig, chief of department. You know what I mean? And that earns you respect, not your rank. Now they respect you as an individual because you're not so far disconnected that you think you're above working. Right. And that's who I want to be. That's who I would say if I could give any piece of advice to a guy jumping into that spot, be that guy. Get out there, even if it's once or twice a month, man, you jump on a rig and you run some calls, you would be surprised at the level of respect that you get.
And the work that that individual or that department will put in for you, because it's like, hey, he's not above, he or she's not above doing it. So when it's go time, we're going to give it everything we have. Because I know for me, like if I have a battalion chief that is out there grinding it with us in the gear, sweating, we're all commonly bonding through suffering, I'm going the extra distance when I need to for that person.
100%. You will run through a doggone wall for that guy. You know what I mean? Or on the opposite end, if you never see that guy and all of a sudden he wants to do great and wonderful things, right? I mean, you're going to do it, but you're not going to do it at that same level, right?
That's right. Right. No, that's a fact. Okay. All right. For promotion and company officer, are you in favor for a simulated computer fire scenario or a scenario involving real world with real companies performing a task in real time?
I'm 100% behind doing the task and getting your companies coming in, like even if it's going out to your training tower or a training ground, right? Get out there, and that's where you do your assessment center. You can't, I mean, there's a lot of great and wonderful programs out there for the computer, but it's never going to be the same as actually seeing a building on fire. You got multiple companies coming in, you got to run that scene. It's never going to be the same, right? In my opinion, right? It might work for some, but for me, if I'm in charge of doing that, if I'm in charge of a training division and we're doing evaluations of guys that are going to get promoted, or if I'm a chief, say in the future, and I'm doing that, it's going to be on a fire ground somewhere. It's going to be on a training ground, and we're gonna throw stuff at you and see how you react. There's just nothing that replaces, because I think where we get in the woods on that is we forget kind of where we come from, right? We're a blue collar profession, right? You can't learn on a computer the same things you're going to learn out there on the fire ground. It's just not possible. I don't care how much AI you throw at somebody, how much great pictures and graphics and little fires that are pumping out the A side, it's not the same as the smells, the sounds, the putting your hands on the trucks. Like, it's just not the same. What if you can't simulate an issue on a truck, right? What if I have a hose go down? Or what are you going to do as command if you have a truck that just takes a shit, right? What are you going to do? You can't simulate that on a computer. Now, if I'm out on the fire ground, I can say, okay, your number one pumper just went down. What are you going to do? Right? You can't do that on a computer. I'm a proponent every day, all day, always will be, of realistic fire ground training. And you've got to get out there and get these guys hands on and looking at things and walking around actual buildings and making decisions as companies are coming in, and as, mom presents at the window with a baby and stuff like that. You've got to do that, and that's the only way you're going to get fire officers that are ready. Any guy can go out there and study for a test, get 100% on a test, and pass a little scene size up on the screen, right? I mean, you can do that. You can study for that, right? You can't study for things that are going to get thrown at you on a fire ground. Nothing goes perfect on a fire ground, and the only way you're going to simulate that is to get out there on the training ground with multiple co companies coming in and making decisions on the fly. That's the only way you're going to do it.
That's a fact. Nothing goes perfect on the fire ground. That's yes. I've yet to be on one where everything, there's always some hic. It may be the smallest, very minute thing, but there's always something that goes wrong. Did I stretch that hose? Did I deploy that hose correctly? Did I throw that ladder right? Did I forget to tie the halyard off? Like, did I really do a good search? So many different things, so many different ways we can learn. And to me, the best way to learn is if you can video that fire ground. And then when you get back, go back, watch it with your crew, like, hey, this is what I did. And then you see little things. We call ourselves tactical athletes, which I agree, we should be in that mindset. But professional athletes, they watch film over and over and over to get better at things. And so it's like, why can't we do that as a fire service? Like you stated earlier, time and place for those computer simulated programs. Time and place. We can do that when if it's a rainy day out or it's really cold, we don't want to go outside, pop it up on the screen. Hey, you're studying for a lieutenant's exam. What would you do in this situation? But to take that as the holy grail and go, all right, because you can teach somebody, this is what you have to say, this is what you have to look at. But taking that person, putting him in that seat, making that truck drive down to the training grounds, have your theatrical smoke, get that heart rate up, get them moving, it changes the game for sure.
Oh, 100%. It changed the game 10 times over, right? Because, like you said, there's a time and place for that, but you're not going to be able to replace, if you're testing for a captain spot or a lieutenant spot, you're not going to be able to, or even a battalion chief spot, right? You're not going to be able to simulate multiple call, like guys getting on the radio calling you, I got this issue, I get this, or a mayday, or something's going on the fire ground. You have to manage all that. And the only way to really see if a guy's ready for that is to do it. And I love the analogy that you said. Like, we are a sports team. If you get down to it, right? Like you said, we're tactical athletes. Watch that film. The only way you can get better is to go back and learn from your mistakes, right? Just like pro athletes, just like a pro football team. We're going to go back and say, okay, this is what was supposed to happen, but look what happened right here. We didn't stretch that hose right, or we forgot to throw a ladder over here. You know, our RIT team wasn't ready. Those kind of things. It's not to point guys out or to say, hey, you suck. It's to get better as a team, right? We want to be that championship team when we get there on the fire ground, right? That's what the people expect. They expect that championship Super Bowl team to hop off that engine. And the only way to do that is, you're exactly right, watch film, train. You know, that's what some of these training evolutions are about. It's just like training camp, right? We're going to go and we're going to run through this until we can't get it wrong, right? And I totally agree with you. That's the only way we're going to get better as a fire service in a whole, is to do training like that. Realistic smoke victims, you know, throwing things that could go wrong, and how are we going to react to it, right? And then go back and watch that film, and that's how we're going to get better.
Yeah. And you mentioned too, because an individual calls you out on something. Now, there's with firefighters, there's ways you can do it. But if somebody were to pull me to the side and go, hey, I noticed this, like if it's a training captain or hell, even my training chief, I noticed you did this and you got it, but you kind of fumbled on it. Don't get mad with criticism. And that's another thing that, in my experience, firefighters have trouble with is honest criticism. Because if you aren't good at something, what good is it for me to go, hey, man, you did perfect. That was awesome. When it wasn't, all that's doing is giving you a false sense of security, false sense of hope, like, hey, I'm good, when you're not. And you're going to repeat that on an actual fire ground where luckily nobody got hurt here, but it might happen there. But firefighters tend to get salty, get mad. Oh, you fucking think you know it all. And it's like, that's not like we are, some of us cannot take constructive criticism. And I've been there as a young, dumb fireman. Like, I thought I knew it all. And then I had to have people, when people sat me down and go, hey, man, you know, you need to do this, that, whatever, I'd get mad at it. Looking back at it now that I'm an adult, I'm grown, hopefully everyone's matured, it's like, that's the only way to learn. We can't know it all. We can't be good at everything in this job because this job is constantly changing, but we have to be able to understand the criticism that we get.
Yeah, and if you want to be the consummate professional that you want to call yourself, right? We should invite that criticism. I invite that. I want you to pick me apart on a fire ground, or like if we go out on training, right? I want you to pick me apart to the point where you get the most little minute thing you saw I could do wrong. I did wrong. Tell me. I want that. I want to know because I want to do better, right? And I think as firemen, we have to have that open mind. You're not going to get better unless you take that criticism, right?
Right.
Right. And as leaders, we got to get, don't give an attaboy if there's not an attaboy to give, right?
That's right.
We don't need participation trophies, right? We're professionals. Let's act like it. If you want to be a great fireman, you should want that criticism. You should invite it. Like, if they didn't say anything about you, raise your hand. Hey, what do you think about how I pulled that hose? You know what I mean? Invite that criticism. If you're going around doing that AAR and they don't come to you, be like, hey, I know I didn't do everything perfect. What did you see that I could have done better, Chief? You know what I mean? Invite that Chris. Ask for it. You know what I mean? That's the only way you're going to get better. And I was the same way as you when we first come in. We think we come out of the academy, we're going to whoop the world. We know everything. You can't tell me nothing, right? But as I have progressed and became, you know, more mature, I guess, in my fire service career, I listen. You know, I listen twice as much as I speak. That's why God gave you two ears, right? One mouth. Listen twice as much as you speak. I wasn't always like that. I don't think most firefighters are, right?
Right.
I think as you move along, in my experience, as I moved along, especially now, I'm open for anything. If I can get better, help me get better.
Love it. Love it. Okay. The wellness and truly being there for one another. You know as much as I do the term brotherhood. Firefighters can show up in full force when the need needs to happen. You know, we always rise to the occasion. But then again, too, certain things where we turn around and we need our brothers and sisters, man, ain't nobody behind us. So, with
Right.
that being said, what does wellness truly being there, that mental health component, what does that mean to you?
For me, it's a very personal and thing that I'm passionate about. It's kind of why, because I started this my own training company on the side, and that's one of our big things. I go around, I do some I'm getting ready to do one here pretty soon, a lecture on mental health and first responders. Because you're right, the brotherhood isn't, and this is just my opinion, it's not what it used to be, right? Don't be my brother just when everything's great, right? If you're gonna call yourself brother, look out for your people. Look out for the guys that you call brother and sister. If you notice things like they're a little bit off, and you spend more time with these guys than you do with your own families, right? You know them. Don't act like you can't say, "Oh, I didn't know." You know, if somebody comes to work and they're just off, right? They're coming in late. They're shutting themselves off in their room, stuff like that. Pull them off to the side, man. Put your arm around them and say, "Hey, bro, you're a little off. What's going on?" Right? And make it to where your culture in your firehouse makes that acceptable. We got to get rid of that stigma that you're not tough because you said something's going on upstairs, right? You wouldn't be afraid to call a Mayday if you were in trouble, right? And we're all coming. Don't be afraid to call that Mayday your mental Mayday, right? Don't be afraid to say, "Hey, man, I'm a little jacked up. I need some help." And if you're a brother, you're gonna see 2 o'clock in the morning, you can call me. 3 o'clock in the morning, you can call me. I'm gonna come to your house, right? And that's where we're losing sight of. That mental Mayday is just as important as that physical Mayday when you're trapped inside a fire, right? Because now you're trapped inside your own head, which can be a very dangerous place if you don't have help, right? And don't pick up the phone when they call you. Look at that phone and put it back down because it's 2 in the morning. I'll call Joe Schmo tomorrow, right? You might not be here tomorrow. You don't pick up that phone. Be a brother 24/7, 365, not just when you're sitting around enjoying a meal and some laughs. It's got to be the hard times too. You know what I mean? And that's where you build that brotherhood through the fire, right? You build that brotherhood through the hard times and the good times, but definitely the hard times, right? Be that guy that they know they can call at 2, 3, 4 in the morning, and you're going to stop what you're doing to come to your brother's aid. I don't care if I'm at my doggone kid's graduation. You call me in and say, "Hey, I'm in a bad place. I'm thinking about doing something crazy. I'm leaving. I'm coming," right? You just, in my opinion, you just called a Mayday, and I'm coming for you. It doesn't matter what time it is, where I'm at, what I'm doing. And that's the brotherhood. That's the brotherhood that we all hear about and talk about and wanted to be part of this for, right? So mental health is a big issue in the fire service right now because it's been a stigma for so long. Even when I was coming up, and I'm by no means an old timer, right? And in the Army too, it was the same way. If you say, "Hey, I'm not quite right upstairs," "Oh shoot, that guy's, don't mess with him. I don't want him on my crew," right? It takes a lot of bravery and guts to say, "Hey, I got something going on. I need help," right? We're all trained to go into a burning building. We're all trained to do EMS, go to a crash, do whatever. But when none of us are trained on how to deal with it once it gets to us. Wasn't part of my academy. I'm sure it wasn't part of yours. You know? And that's where we got to step in as brothers and sisters and be that difference and be that buffer. Now we got to start helping each other out when we're going through the worst times. We're there for you. Call a Mayday right now. The whole fire ground's coming for you, and it should be the same way in the firehouse.
That's a fact. I mean, for me growing up, it was suck it up, buttercup. Like, or hey, if this image bothers you or this call bothers you, you might be in the wrong profession. And that's how it was. I'm not saying it was right, but that's how I was raised up. Like, you kept things to yourself. If you talk to somebody, it had to, for me, it had to be like a solid homie who I know wouldn't go as soon as I tell him, "All right, cool." And I leave, and he picks up the phone and, "Hey, guess what? The angels," you know what I mean? So, but now it's different. Like, and you know, it's not just the fire ground because, like Chief Rhodes said it best, it's not the calls. I mean, I'm not saying it's not 100% the calls, but a good number of stuff is shit that goes on within your department. Shit's in the firehouse, rumor mill, people talking crap about you, experiences. Like, it's just it's not just the cause that we go to that's horrific. Yes, it is horrific that we see the stuff we see, but a majority of the time, that's not what does it.
No, and I've talked to guys, and I can tell you almost probably 9 times out of 10, the guys I've talked to that are having problems, it's not like you said, it's not the calls, it's the rumor mill, it's personal problems with their family, it's everything but the calls, right? I mean, the calls suck, like you
Yeah, the
said.
calls suck. Absolutely.
We know it, but it's 9 times out of 10, like I said, guys that I've talked to, and even for me, it wasn't the calls, it was everything else. And that's another thing that you bring it up as far as being brothers and sisters. What is all this rumor and high school shit, right?
Bro.
Why you talk? Why you talking about your bro? Why you talk like you should be squashing that shit, right? If that man in there to hear what you're saying about him and you won't say it to his face, that's the coward stuff, right? If you got something to say to somebody, say it to them. Don't start rumors and talking bad about somebody, right? Because you might have somebody listening that believes you, like, oh, he's a solid guy. He says this guy sucks, he must suck. When it's not the case, he just doesn't like them on a personal level, right? That's when you got to cut that shit down and be like, hey, would you say that to him? You know what I mean? If that guy ain't in the room, you got to squash that stuff. We as if you're gonna call yourself his brother too, you got to squash that, right? You're gonna talk about him like that. Let's get him on the phone if you got something to say, right?
That's fact.
Because that's the only way it gets better. Because room real, that's like a cancer in the firehouse, man. You know what I mean? And
Yeah.
that goes back to being a good brother and a good sister. It's squashing that stuff and saying, hey, maybe you two need to get together and talk, but we ain't gonna have that here. You're not gonna be talking bad about my brother here, right? You guys
Yeah.
might have an issue, and you guys got to work that out. Let's not talk about how bad somebody is when they're not even in the room.
Yeah.
You know what I
No,
mean?
that's yep. You're right. Because through my experiences earlier back in the day, man, I was that guy. I'm gonna 100% admit that I was that person. I'd be like, oh, first piece of shit. I'm going off of what I've heard. Never worked with the person. Oh, hey,
Right.
how's this person? Yep, that guy's a piece of shit. All right, cool, he's a piece of shit, then I don't need to know. But now, and I've had it happen now where someone's like, hey, I'm going to this, I got assigned to this person. What are your thoughts? And me being who I am now, I think about it, and I'm like, all right, I'll use some sort of words where I'm like, this is what they're known for, but I haven't worked with that person in this long. They might have changed. So I will, what I usually tell them is you have to see for yourself, but just know in the back burner, their reputation is either this way, that way, or that way. Like good, bad, or indifferent, but you have to make that call as the person because they might have changed. You never know. But on the flip side, we all know some shit bags that are shit bags and they're just gonna stay shit bags. So I'm just gonna be transparent. They're never going to change. It
Yep.
is what it is.
No, and I agree. And I do the same thing. I'll tell somebody, hey, I haven't worked with this dude. Here's what I've heard. But I said, take it with a grain of salt. You know what I mean? You go make your own opinion, right? But on the flip side, like you said, there's always in every profession, not just the fire,
Everyone, that's right.
there's shit bags that slip through the cracks, right?
Yep.
And
Yep.
if I know and I've worked with the guy and I know he's a shit bag, I still won't talk bad on his name. I'll simply say, you make your own judgment when you get there,
Right.
right? And sometimes that speaks enough, right? And like you said, people can change. I mean, I was when I there for a long time in the fire service, I was a dick. Like, I'm just gonna be straight up. Like, I was a dick, but I learned from that, right?
Right.
And I took some criticism from some guys, maybe not so well at first, but when I go back and think about it, I was like, yeah, maybe he's right. And I've changed the way I approach things
That's
to
fact.
where you know what I mean? So, you got there's it's a two-sided coin, right? Like, you gotta. There are guys that can change, like you said. Hey, here's what I've experienced. I haven't worked with him in a long time. Maybe he's changed. Give him a chance. You know what I mean? And then they can go make their own judgment of how they feel, right? Because I've had that personally. Somebody told me, oh, this guy's a piece of crap. You ain't getting along with him for nothing. Him and I talk on the phone almost daily now. You know what I mean? Like, it's just maybe your personality didn't get along with their personality,
That's
right?
right. That's right.
So you gotta, but you gotta be careful walking that line, right? Like, I'm not gonna talk bad about the guy regardless, but I will tell you the things like I just said, like make your opinion when you get there, or here's my experience, but I haven't worked with him in 5 years. Maybe he's changed.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to talk bad on the man's name and just say, hey, oh, he's garbage. You know what I mean? Like, you go make your own opinion, but I won't say the one thing I stand by, I won't say anything about somebody, I won't say to them, right? If I say you're trash, I'll tell you're trash, right? But be that man and be able to do that. And that goes part of being a brother too. Whether it's blood brother or brothers like me and you, if I got an issue with you and I think you're trash, I'm gonna say, hey, I think you're garbage and here's why. Maybe you can work it out, maybe you can't. But at least you're being a man about it. You're not being some high schooler talking behind the guy's back that you won't say to him, right? And then when he walks in the room, you're like, hey, what's up, bro? Ain't nothing worse than that.
And that happens a lot,
A lot.
unfortunately, a lot.
And I'm looking at you like you were just saying how this guy was trash, and if you saw him again, you know what I mean? And now you're shaking his hand and saying, "Hey, what's up, bro? I missed you." Come on now, we got to stop that.
And the crazy thing is, most of the time, and I'll say most of the time, those issues can be resolved by conversation or listening to that other person talk about why they do this, why they do that. But to me too, another thing that causes the issue is lack of confidence or the other individual's confidence in knowing he can do the job, and the ability to be able to do the job makes you uncomfortable because you can't. And
Oh,
that's
yeah.
where I think the issue is too, is you somebody feels threatened by somebody else who puts in that work, who puts in that drive, and the other person just either they don't want to do it or they just don't have the discipline to go out there and better themselves. So I'm trying to figure out the word, like my professionalism towards the fire service or my actions on the fire ground make you uncomfortable because you can't do it.
Oh yeah, and I mean I've seen it. You know what I mean? Like guys that don't want to get their ass out of the recliner, but then I've had guys complain to me, "Oh, this lieutenant, all he wants to do is train. All he wants, makes us work out." And I'm like, I don't see what you're complaining. Like,
Problem. Yeah.
you know what I mean? Like, what are you complaining about? You know what I mean?
Right.
And it does. It goes back to, like you said, not having that confidence in your skills and abilities, and now you're with a guy that is very confident and very good at what he does. And it's your lack of knowledge that is making you insecure, right? So instead of just saying, "Hey, I'm going to go get his knowledge and I'm going to work out with him, I'm going to train with him," you decide to talk bad about him, right? And that's what we got to stop. Get your ass out of the recliner and go learn from that guy and bring your skill set up. And then guess what? You guys won't have an issue.
That's right. Now it'd be
You
a
know what I'm saying?
competition because there's nothing friendlier. Firemen love competition. So it's like,
Oh, yeah.
hey, all right, you think you're good? Hey, let's go do this. Let's time it. Whoever's done faster, like you get that back and forth, that machoism, that bravado.
Yeah, so I would say to those guys, man, stop staying, stop being mediocre, and then talking bad about your brother. Remember, be your interview. Remember when you said you were going to be this hard charging fireman? Like, live your interview, right? Every single day, and get off your ass. And if you're in that slump and you're sitting on your ass talking bad about that guy that's out there working, get out, go work with him. And like you said, now, hey. I sucked a few months ago, but I'm right with you now. Where you at, bro? You know what I mean? And
Right.
now, and that's how that cohesion gets. That's how that crew gets better. That's how you get rid of that back and forth stuff, that talking bad about each other. You know what I mean? That's how you get rid of it. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's all a communication thing, I think.
Yeah. And you hit it, man. I swear, when you said that earlier, you hit like there are some times where it's usually not the right place or time, but you see an individual who at one point in their career, regardless of what's going on, you never know what's going on in people's situations. But the ones who are completely checked out, they're making fun of the ones that are working out, going to outside training, throwing ladders by themselves on a hot day. What I would like to ask that person is, do you remember when you had that drive and that chief or whoever it was from that organization made that phone call to you offering the job, how you felt? What happened? What went wrong? Why don't you feel like that today? You know what I mean? Like a little self-reflection, man. Self-reflection can go a long freaking way, but there are some people who, like, what happened? Remember when you felt like this? Why are you like this now?
Yeah, 100%. And I've had that conversation with guys. That's why I brought it up. Like, when you sat in that interview and you said, "Hey, I'm gonna train, I'm gonna work out, I'm gonna do all these things to be there for those people in my community," and now you're sitting there in the recliner watching TV all day. What happened? Where did that disconnect happen? Who hurt you, bro? You know what I mean? Like, let's get you back out there, because I'm doing the right things, and you used to do the right things. So where's the disconnect? You know what I mean? And that's where you got to have those hard conversations with your brothers and sisters. You want to talk to brothers and sisters, right? That's where you got to have that hard conversation. Like you just said, say, "Hey, man, your issue isn't with me. Your issue is with you. I'm doing the things that you used to do at a high level. Why don't you just come back out there and get to where we know you can be?" You know what I mean? And
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
they'll probably get pissed off. They'll probably get pissed off, but they'll probably go back and think about it, right?
Right.
And then the problem will fix itself.
Right. Damn. Okay. I always like to ask the guests, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up? And you're on the part two phase of that in your life, but where you are at currently right now, what else, what other goals, or where would you like to see yourself before you decide to just hang it up 100% completely?
Where I would like to get, and where I'm looking at getting myself to, is back to where I can make a real impact. I can see myself as maybe an assistant chief of training, something like that, to where I can really pass on this passion and love for the job to the guys coming up that are going to replace me. You know what I mean? I want to leave the fire service in good hands because I love the fire service. I love everything about it, and I want to leave a legacy that's gonna be there for years, right? Yeah, who trained you? Champion did, right? And that's my only focus. I don't care about money. I don't care about titles. I want to be in a position where I can make a difference in the future of the fire service. That's my goal. I don't even care if it's just being a senior firefighter somewhere. If I can make the difference in a couple guys' lives and leave that legacy to where they want to be how I am, that's all I'm asking for. I don't care about titles. I don't care about any of that crap. I want to leave it better than I found it, bro. I know you've heard that before, but in my heart, that's my drive. That's why I get up every day, because I want to leave this thing better than I found it.
And if anybody wants to get a hold of you for your lecture series, like this is like the shameless plug, how would they go about doing so?
I have my personal Facebook. I have Instagram, my personal Instagram. I have my company's Instagram, From the Ashes. Find it on Instagram. Or they can email me, justinchampion15@gmail.com. And we'll make whatever they need happen, man. And I'm going out to a department to do my mental health lecture, not charging them anything. Like, I just want to get the word out there. I'm not trying to get rich. I'm not trying. I just want to make it better than I found it. And one of our foundations is the mental health thing, right? And I just want to help firefighters. If you're out of state and you want me to come talk, all I ask is you help me get out there. That's it. I got the rest. You know what I mean? So reach out to me and let's help some guys. You know what I mean? Let's train. You know, we don't just do mental health. I do leadership lectures. I do anything you really want to get done. You want to do fire stuff. You want to do engine company stuff. We'll make it happen. And none of the guys I work with are trying to get rich. We just want to make it better than we found it. That's it.
Absolutely. Awesome. Justin, I've appreciated this conversation. Really, I mean, lots of things for people to digest and hopefully go back and think about and talk to themselves or talk to their crews. I appreciate you. I appreciate what you're doing for the fire service. A lot of us don't want the recognition. Like, a lot of us aren't in this profession for the money, because I've never really heard of a rich fireman unless you're on the West Coast or so, you know, San Francisco, California, some shit like that. But thank you for being you. Thank you for continuing to do what you do for the fire service. And I really appreciate your time for coming on Talking Shop, either when you didn't have to do that.
And I appreciate you having me, man. I'm down to come back anytime you want.
All right, fantastic. I'll hold you to
We'll do. I hope you hold me to it. Let's do it.
that. All right, bro.
All right, thanks, man.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.